Hello and welcome to Changes, a new program from Chief Healthcare Executive. I'm Ron Southwick, the lead editor of Chief Healthcare Executive. As the name suggests, Changes is a program that looks at the big changes in the healthcare industry, from federal policies, AI, and other cutting-edge technologies, and the overall evolution of the industry. We have a great guest today. We talk with Hal Wolf, the president and CEO of HIMSS. The big HIMSS conference begins in a few days. It runs March 9th through 12th in Las Vegas. Hal gives us a preview of that event, but we have a wide-ranging conversation. We talk about AI and how health systems are looking at it differently. We talk about some of his concerns about rural hospitals and safety net hospitals, cybersecurity, telehealth, and so much more. It's a great conversation. Thanks so much for joining us. As we talk now, we're only a few days from HIMSS, but what are you especially excited about with this year's conference?
Yeah, this has been such a remarkable year. There has been globally a lot of investment and a lot of acceleration and innovation. People are at different spots, but what I'm very excited about this year in particular with HIMSS, coming into HIMSS 26, we've really been transitioning from theoretical to actual implementation. A lot of AI, a lot of operational fixes. I think people have really caught on to how we can start to approach digital health in earnest and at scale. I mean, if we go back, and you know this all too well, it wasn't until the pandemic that we actually started even using video that much. And now we're worrying about AI agents and how they're going to come, to work inside shops. And what I see globally, which is also fantastic, and you'll see this here at HIMSS 26, is you do see the investments taking place, but people aren't just putting in electronic medical records in Europe and things of that nature. They're looking two steps down the road. And, how am I going to deploy AI? Am I ready? What does my back end look like? Who am I going to be working with? So, it's not baby steps right now. I mean, people are kind of doing leapfrog. And so I think you're going to see the technology. I think you're going to see the networking. I think you're going to see the panels. I think you're going to see the conversations really taking a gripping view of the transformation that's occurring across the global health ecosystem.
Well, you already mentioned AI, so, and spoiler alert, I guess it's going to be a big topic at HIMSS, so.
Yeah, no, I mean it is everywhere, right? I mean the question about AI has been, it's not a silver bullet itself, but there are the components of a silver bullet in there that definitely can weigh itself into making improvements and change and kind of relieving some of the pressures that we have inside the ecosystem. So we have all the issues that are still there. The silver tsunami, we're front and present. We have our disease burden, which is on top of us. We have shrinking revenue, which is coming on top of us. That's always going to be a challenge. And from a chronic disease standpoint, we have growing numbers because we're better and people are living longer, and we're going ahead and being able to anticipate problems. But it's the workforce shortage and the money that are really the two big drivers right now. So people are having to think through how the health model and the medical model are going to get along. And the health model has been growing like crazy. So I think you're going to see both on display at HIMSS 26. And I think what's really on top of the industry right now as a whole is how do we bring those two in comfort with each other. We used to think about them blending a few years ago, that the health model was there and the medical model leaned into it. I don't really see that as much anymore. I think we're seeing more about the health models finding its place and the medical model needs them to. So now we're going to get into a whole scope of practice conversation. And that's going to be one of the topics I think you'll be hearing about as well. So it's getting meaty.
Even at the HIMSS last year, the AI conversation was evolving, and I think we even talked about it before the conference that people were less inclined just to get an AI tool to say they were adding it to the toolkit, and they were really looking more, especially at HIMSS, I heard more and more, We need real things that are going to solve real problems, and we need to see returns sooner than later. Is that your perspective on how the AI conversation is changing a bit?
100%. It's and I think you're right. If you go back 3 years, people really didn't know what they could do with it, and we saw some of the early adopters making some significant investments and efforts in their impact on operations. But we're now beginning to see not only that, but clinical decision support. And then again, where can it relieve those pressures? So I think it's very real, and the investments are very strategic. So you may have had a CEO or others in healthcare systems say, "Hey, I don't know what it is, but get something AI up there because everyone's expecting me to." And that's not unfair. I mean, that was a little bit of that going around. And now it's like, okay, let's really talk strategically about how these investments can impact my investment curve, my cost curve, right? If I had all the money in the world and I built every hospital and clinic I wanted, I can't staff it. And oh, by the way, I don't have the money to do that. So can I use AI and its capability to replace people, to reduce the amount of capital I need to put out? So my money, I'm always going to spend more, but my question is, can I reduce that curve? Can I reduce the arc of my cost going up by making smart investments in AI as one of those really critical tools? And then there's the other piece of it, which again, I would come back to, which is the whole health model and what's happening in terms of taking care of people at home, how that's being brought forward. Those are all really critical investments that are also occurring. So home care, and how do I begin to shift primary and recognize, better way to put it, primary and secondary prevention? How do I let AI models and other organizations take that off my plate so I can get everyone back to the top of their license and doing the absolute necessity, which frankly will improve return on investment because you're going to be maximizing your financial throughput with the highest level of care. So all those are happening simultaneously, and it is amazing. I've talked to CEOs of hospital systems and governments all around the world, and 2 years ago they were like, "What does it do?" Last year it was like, "I kind of see what it does," and this year is, "We're using it here, here, and here." So the sophistication of its use and the thoughtfulness behind it has really improved.
Well, when HIMSS took place last year, President Trump had just returned to the Oval Office. The administration was just really starting to get set up. And there was a lot of uncertainty about what federal policies were going to look like. Now, we've had the passage of H.R. 1. There are some big changes in Medicaid and some fairly substantial cuts coming in the years ahead. Maybe not immediately, but they are coming down the road. How does this play in terms of, you've already talked about some of the financial challenges that healthcare providers facing. How do you think this is going to change maybe some of the conversation at HIMSS and especially maybe drive maybe even more urgency to move forward with some of these digital tools to address the workforce shortages?
Yeah, well, I think everything you said, of course, is absolutely true. And I think the financial pressures, especially on our rural hospitals, they're immense. I'm very, very worried, especially on the Medicaid side, because I don't think people appreciate how difficult it was, is, and it's going to be. It's not like the rural hospital environments were doing great. It's not like our public health hospitals that have been taking care of, the less fortunate, if you would, or those that need the extra support. But they've all been under financial stress. And now we're going to squeeze that even harder. So I'm worried about that, of course. But I do think from a government standpoint, particularly, and you're going to see it at HIMSS with Dr. Oz coming in and his team from CMS, they're working very hard to figure out how to use digital tools in order to extend care, extend access, quality. they're counting on some of those investments to really pay off. So I'm looking forward to being on stage with them and having those conversations about where CMS is. I've had the privilege of being in some meetings with them and getting some heads up about where they are and where they're going. It's pretty impressive. I mean, they have a thoughtful approach. But I do think on top of that, everyone recognizes that significant change and efficiencies have to occur, but it won't be enough to cover quickly. If there's an issue, Ron, that we all know in healthcare is we do not change rapidly. And when the money valve can get cut off, but it's really difficult. I've always called it the 3% rule. I can scale up and I can scale down within 3% fairly easily. I mean, not easily, but I can go up and down 3% rationally. But when things change beyond 3%, it gets really difficult. We have contracts, we have facilities. That's a hard number, right? So I think a lot of people are dealing with that right now.
Well, I'm very much looking forward to the conversation with Dr. Oz at HIMSS that you're going to be participating in. What are some of the things CMS is doing that you're especially intrigued about? Because I've been talking to some folks, they really have been giving CMS some credit for really pushing forward, using more technology. I've also heard that CMS has a lot more people with high experience in tech than really ever before. So just what, from your perspective, what are the things that CMS is doing that you think are positive steps?
No, well, first of all, I mean, both your points are very true. So they're really thinking about the engagement at the patient level and how do we use the technology in order to or pave the way from a regulatory standpoint so that the patient engagement can take place. And what are the kind of tools that are out there that can extend health and extend care? So those are the two. I don't want to steal the panel's thunder of what they're going to present, but you're absolutely right in that ballpark. Secondly, they do have a very experienced staff at CMS, and I want to give a lot of credit to Dr. Oz for pointing out in articles in the Washington Post and coming in and saying, I've been very impressed with the quality of the people in the federal government, that they know their stuff and their vision. Not all members of the administration have been as forthright in recognizing the talent that's on hand. And I think that's led to a very energized CMS that's making positive contributions. So I'm looking forward to the demonstrations as well. I'm going to leave it at that because I don't want to kill it. That just wouldn't be fair.
I was trying to get too many spoilers for you. Sorry about that.
No, it's all good. There are always opportunities that we can look at decisions that are happening inside an administration and raise important question marks. And you've done that already. And I have agreed with them 100%. And at the same time, we have some people that are really thinking it through. And I think it'll be a great session worth attending and seeing and listening.
Well, I wanted to get back to rural health because you mentioned that before, your concerns about rural hospitals, which are shared across the industry, really across America, I think. Now, the administration has launched this rural health transformation program, which is offering $50 billion for 5 years to try and improve rural health in some underserved communities. Do you feel like there's at least more attention now on some of the gravity of the problems facing rural health communities?
Yes and no, in the sense that I think from our standpoint at HIMSS, we have always had an incredibly strong focus on rural health. So if you go through the different acts and the different funding supports necessary, first of all, to wire the back end of America so that it had the access to digital transformation. But yes, to your point, absolutely. I think the fact that everyone recognizes this is a really critical need, and it's been going downhill. It's been suffering for quite a while. So I grew up in a relatively rural community in North Carolina when I grew up there. And the hospitals in our area have all closed, with the exception of the one in the main county. And this is in Watauga County in North Carolina, and Watauga Medical Center. And proudly, my dad was on that board a number of years ago, so I watched it. But in the counties around us, the smaller hospitals all closed. So we were lucky. We built a centralized hospital that's thriving with three counties around it. I have other friends in other areas where they've just lost the capability because they don't have the physician access that they would normally have. It's incredibly competitive, nursing, and then you just have the funding mechanisms to keep it open. And there's an advancement and an investment that goes on. So we need money in order to invest in the facilities themselves. We need access, which is going to have to be long distance in many cases, to medical facilities and experts and specialists and even primary care. I mean, we got a long way to go in primary care. And right now we're hoping that AI is going to be able to fill in a lot of those primary care needs simply because we're running out of doctors. You know the figures as well as anybody, that we have a significant gap in the United States and it's growing globally. Right now, I think the WHO is estimating our gap is around 11 million, with upwards to 18. And Morgan, who was doing some research and even found a reference by one of the large consulting houses saying as much as over 70 million is going to be a gap, in the next 10 to 15 years, which is not unrealistic because you recognize that that's about a doubling of the number of people that are needed versus what we have today, and we've got a huge gap as it is. So I think we should be nervous, and I think what we have to recognize is that when you undermine rural health, you undermine one of the most important economic engines that exist inside the United States, and that's not acceptable. And so we really, I'm thrilled to see that we're paying attention to it. Now we've got to use that $50 billion wisely. We have to use it with thoughtful intention. And we've been focused on that through our government relations and HIMSS.
Well, there's been one positive step, federal health policy, the extension of waivers for telehealth programs and hospital at home programs. They actually are getting 5-year waivers and a 2-year waiver for
Huge.
telehealth programs. So, going to be interested to see the conversation at HIMSS about that because now, at least for the first time in a while, there's some certainty in some telehealth programs, and I'm curious to see how that might drive more conversation about maybe expanding access to tackle some of these problems.
Totally. I think that's right. And look, that was the right thing to do. I would have been stunned if those had not been extended because they're so practical. We've seen the results. We've seen the access. We've seen the impact on quality. It's a precursor to the fundamental change and the redesign of how we deliver care and health, not just in the United States, but globally. So I was very, very pleased with the extensions. And you're right, it's a level of certainty. And when you have a level of certainty, you understand where to invest and what to do.
And I think that was holding off some providers and maybe either standing up or expanding hospital at home programs because they just weren't sure is the government going to be on board with this a year or 2 years from now. Now with the
Absolutely.
approvals in 2030, maybe they've got some more runway to maybe try some different things. So be interesting
Well,
to see.
and look, the healthcare sector is not alone. We've seen a number of things that have created uncertainty out of Washington and in the investment field. And other than very large data centers, a lot of businesses have been hesitant to expand because they're not sure where the market's going to go. So this does add certainty, and I agree, it gives us thoughtfulness. When you look at it at the state level, HIMSS has been a part of a number of programs, Minnesota, Michigan come to mind immediately, where we've been involved at the state level in the investments, figuring out what to do strategically. And that has everything to do with an approach both from rural into the urban areas and the connectivity that exists. And there'll be a very interesting panel I get to moderate with Colorado, Nevada, and Louisiana representatives, talking about how their states are going to be utilizing the technology investments and bringing forward on the rural and back into their cities as well.
You mentioned uncertainty just a minute ago, and I wanted to pick your brain a little bit about that because, I mean, a year ago, there was a lot of uncertainty, just as there is with any new administration that comes into office. I'm surprised the number of leaders I'm talking to now that still see uncertainty in the forecast, whether it's federal policy or even understanding what the economy is going to do, that there's a number of people that say they would just like to have a clear picture of what's in front of them. Even if it wasn't great, then they could sort of plan accordingly. Do
Yeah.
you, your conversation with healthcare leaders, are you still seeing a fair amount of uncertainty out there, whether it's the economy or federal policy or anything else?
I mean, I think we all see what we see, right? And it depends on what you're trying to accomplish and where you're trying to make the investment. So healthcare, there's like in any industry, there's leaders, there's fast followers, moderate and slow followers. And the majority of healthcare goes into the moderate to slow follower stage. I can't afford to be on the bleeding edge. I want to be in a position where I can see something that actually works. I can understand what my dependencies are and how to build my systems in anticipation of it, whether it's operational, technology, et cetera. So, yeah, there's some caution because you only have so much money for investment. Now, when I look across the ecosystem, and I should ask you because you may even have a better feel for it than I do, but it's very rare for a system to have 1 or 2% set aside for investment about what's next, right? Because I'm trying to pay my staff, I'm paying for what I have right now, my revenue might be going down, and so where am I going to pick my shots? If I only, let's say I have 1% I can set aside for investment, which by the way would be a lot. You know, that would be huge. If I'm going to do that, I got to be fairly certain that if I go down that path, it's going to pay itself off. So I need to kill two birds with one stone. I need to be able to look up and say, if I'm making a fundamental investment in my analytical layer, will it solve my problem today and help me support AI tomorrow? If I'm making an investment, right, in continuity of care, how am I thinking about outside devices and outside organizations that are going to be helping me with primary and secondary prevention? So those are really strategic questions that I need to have a pretty decent understanding before I make that investment, so I know I'm not going to have to come back and redo it again in a short period of time. So I think it's understandable. I do. And look, there is no such thing as perfect certainty. If there was, we could get a crystal ball and make a very different living, you know, doing that type of stuff. But the only thing I know is that I'll probably have less percentage of investment available to me tomorrow than I do today, unless there's some kind of government grant coming forward. And that doesn't seem to be gushing out of Washington these days, except on the rural side, which is fantastic. And also the market is accelerating. And so the new tools that are popping up are numerous. And so I need to be able to look through that and figure out where to pick my shots.
You talked about those choices of investments. Something that sometimes doesn't get the investment that some healthcare leaders would like is cybersecurity, as they balance all these other things. And that's an area where obviously we've seen how much damage cyber attacks can do to hospitals and health systems and other healthcare providers. The Change Healthcare attack from a couple of years ago. This is an area that I think has gotten plenty of attention now. But do you see healthcare leaders viewing cybersecurity with maybe a greater sense of urgency, maybe since the Change Healthcare cyber attack than maybe they had before?
I'm going to say yes, but still not enough. You know, cybersecurity, it's one of those table stakes issues. You know, do I have the right number of locks on my doors and windows on my house? If someone's really determined to come in, at what level, you know, can I build towards? Do I have the expertise? Am I getting the right guidance? And cybersecurity isn't just an in-hospital situation. It's a multi-tiered environment against the stack, right? It's my outside person, my inside person. And then we get to the real truth of it, which is that Most of my breaches start with someone doing something they shouldn't do. So it's a, hit in the head kind of a moment. Someone clicked something, someone opened the door, and that's what allows something to come through. I do agree with you 100%. People are absolutely focused on it. It doesn't get the sizzle that it probably deserves because we're all focused on some other aspects like AI and things of that nature. But let's just call it out. It's absolute table stakes.
And I think, especially, we just saw the University of Mississippi Medical Center, they're dealing with a horrific cyber attack that's caused some real disruptions there. I think just yesterday they were starting to get their phones back, an attack that happened almost 2 weeks ago. So,
Yeah.
just another example of just what disruption these attacks can
It
bring.
is. And when these attacks happen, they get attention. And then people go through and they look at where they are, right? And then what do I do? Am I next? It's not gonna go away. Right? This is too much money in attacks, ransom, disruptiveness. Because just people are smart. And they're jerks. And so they're going to, it could be a combination of the two. They're really going to be coming at it, and it's never going to go away. I just think that part of the investment of every question you should be asking in anything you're doing, whether it's a simple or complex technology, is how is it going to impact my vulnerability? And how do I use it to ensure that I can minimize my cybersecurity negativity or impacts? It's difficult. And you're really relying on the expertise of your IT organization or outside firms. There's not a lot you can do at the strategic level. Other than look down at a really hardworking CIO or chief security officer and say, are we protected? And what's my risk? What's my risk? And there's always going to be a stratus. There's always going to be a hierarchy. We're pretty good here, here, and here. This is our vulnerability. This is what it would take to be perfect. Well, it's no such thing as perfection, but at the highest level. And then you're going to have to make an investment call. Again, it comes down to that. How strong are the locks on the doors? How much do I need to invest in order to do it? And what do I give up in order to do that? And if you don't, pays the price, just like you're saying in Mississippi.
I know we're
Is
getting
that
to
un Do you think that's unfair, or do you think that makes sense?
I think it makes a lot of sense, and that's the hard part for, I mean, even a large system with ample resources can make tough choices with cybersecurity. But I just really feel for, again, talked a lot about rural hospitals or even some independent, community hospitals. If you're choosing, okay, we need better cybersecurity, but then it's like, but there's this MRI machine that we really desperately need. Not even the highest tech device, but just like another good MRI
No,
or
these are
something.
basics.
These are tough chests. I mean, there's are. I don't envy the job of CFOs right now. I really do not, to hear another what another healthcare leader just said. Like, a CFO right now is making a lot of hard choices, I think.
It really is. And in this and you hit the nail on the head. These are investment choices, and they've got to figure out at what level of risk do I carry as an organization? Because I do need that MRI machine. And that is really critical, or I can't deliver care. So these are the choices that are being made every day in our hospitals. And as you said, I don't envy those positions.
I know we need to wrap up because I know you've got to get busy for the conference just a few days. Anything that we didn't hit on that you wanted to highlight or something you're especially looking forward to as part of the many robust discussions at HIMSS?
Yeah, well, I'm gonna plug a panel that I'm doing, if I may. And this is a really interesting one. This has to do really with the attitude of AI. So of the apps themselves. Let me just sort of set this up. When you go to select an application, it's really important to understand what attitude it's walking into your shop with. Is it an app that's designed to minimize cost? Is it purely on a quality side? Is it set up in order to deny care or service? What is the fundamental attitude of that AI app when it walks in the door? Is it customer facing appreciation? What is it there to do? And this is something that a lot of people don't think about. It's a critical layer, though, in the way that you think about the value proposition of what to select when you're going into the market. So you're going to hear from Kalait in Israel that has an extensive amount of work that they've done with Harvard Medical, who will also be there, talking about, and along with myself, Gil's going to be, Bashi is going to be moderating the panel, and really talking about what are the decision making that they've come to realize you need to work through in order to make the right selections.
Sounds
So
like
it's a nuance, but this is the nuance level. This is no longer about whether or not we should. It's like, oh, so what's the attitude walking in? And it's actually going to be pretty interesting. So
And
there you go. I had to put that plug in because I think it's actually going to be a very cool session.
it sounds like a great session and going beyond like we know we should, but how should we do it is a big question as
Exactly.
well. So excellent.